Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Introducing Home Care Plus, a new subscription service from Lowe's that helps make life easier by giving members a hand with home maintenance. Let Lowe's tackle the tasks you keep meaning to do, like electric dryer vent cleaning, replacing hard-to-reach light bulbs, and more. Subscribe to Home Care Plus for just $99 a year and consider your to-do list done. Members get more at Lowe's. Available in select zip codes only. Cancel anytime. Non-refundable fee. Product purchase required. Terms and service restrictions apply. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Save big money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of bagged concrete and mortar mixes, great for any project. Whether you're pouring a walkway, a concrete slab, or setting a post, view our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Asa Elrup sat across from the man she was married to for decades, looked at him, didn't use his first name. She called him Mr. Huerman. She says she did it on purpose to put a wall between herself and whoever she was about to be talking to, because the man sitting across from her in that Long Island jail wasn't supposed to be Rex, not her Rex, not the Rex who built a career as a Manhattan architect, who raised a daughter with her, who shared a home and a life and 3 decades of ordinary days. She needed him to be someone else for this conversation to even take place. So she made him someone else. She called him Mr. Huerman. And she says when she did, he looked very, very nervous. Then she asked the question, how many women did you do this to? He said 8. She didn't even ask who the 8th was. That exchange, captured not on film, but recounted on camera by Asa herself in the new final, I guess somewhat unexpected, Peacock docuseries, The Gilgo Beach Killer, House of Secrets. Remember this one? It's the one Curtis 50 Cent Jackson put out a couple, like last year or 2 years ago. I'm kind of remember. It's hard to remember when it dropped. I almost want to say it was 24. I could be off on that. But a brand new episode has dropped post-conviction. Post admission of guilt, and it is fascinating. It is the best one of the entire series, in my opinion. This is not an advertisement for it either. I just happened to come across it yesterday and was, oh, this will be interesting. And my goodness, there's a lot to unpack in this episode, especially the psychology of Asa. And I'm not here to rip on her. I'm not here to say disparaging things. I'm not here to do any. I'm here to kind of break down what we saw and look at the humanity behind it. This week, by the way, also, Siobhan Scott will be with Robin and me. We'll do our live on Wednesday. Thursday, that episode drops to everybody. We're going to really dive deep into it from a behavioral analysis perspective with Robin's background, and then a psychotherapist background as well with Siobhan. So you don't want to miss that. So make sure you hit subscribe wherever you're listening or watching so you do not miss that conversation later in the week. Let's go back to that exchange. Like I said, captured not on film, but recounted on camera by Asa herself in that final episode of the Peacock docuseries, The Gilgo Beach Killer, House of Secrets. That's what it's called. There's a lot of docs out right now. That's the one I'm talking about. That's where this this story begins. Not with the guilty plea, not with the evidence. With a woman sitting across from the man she shared her entire adult life with, hearing him admit to things she never imagined him capable of, and trying to build a psychological structure around it in real time. Trying to figure out how to hold information that doesn't fit anywhere inside the life she thought she was living. And I think the reason the story is so hard to process isn't because of what Rex Heuermann confessed to. We already knew that. It's because of what Asa does with that information afterward and how much of it makes no sense until you consider what 30 years of never questioning, never challenging, and never knowing what to look for actually does to a person when the floor drops out. Let me ground this. Rex Heuermann pled guilty on April 8th to the murders of Melissa Barthelemy, Megan Waterman, Amber Lynn Costello, Maureen Brainerd Barnes, Jessica Taylor, Sandra Costella, and Valerie Mack. He also admitted to causing the death of Karen Vergata. Though under the terms of his plea, he won't be charged with her. These span from 93 to 2010. He strangled his victims. He dismembered some of them. He scattered their remains across Long Island, along Ocean Parkway, near Gilgo Beach in Marinville, in the Hamptons, on Fire Island. He's scheduled to be sentenced on June 17th, life without parole as part of the deal. He's agreed to cooperate with the FBI's Behavioral Analysis Unit, the unit John Douglas built. John's in the dock. The real-life mind hunter, which is actively studying him to help identify and catch other serial killers. But none of that is what makes the final episode land the way it does. What makes it land is what came out of Rex Heuermann's mouth in that private confession room and what Asa did with it. Asa says Heuermann told her seven of the killings happened in the basement of their Massapequa Park home. The house they shared, the house where they raised their children. He told her every one of those murders happened while she and the kids were away. He said Sandra Costello, his first known victim, November 1993, was the exception. That happened in his vehicle. He described that one as spontaneous. Every other one was planned. The vehicle was recovered by investigators decades later in Pennsylvania. The evidence from it also linked him to the 1996 killing of Karen Vergata. He also told Asa that these eight women were his only ones. And Asa says that as he talked, something happened that she did not expect. It started to feel like Rex of a different time. The Rex she knew, the voice, the cadence, the family, the familiarity of a man she'd spent her entire adult life with. She says she didn't want that version. She wanted to see the one I needed to see. But here's the thing about wanting to see the monster version of someone you love for 30 years. The wiring doesn't cooperate. Later in the same episode, the cameras capture phone calls between Asa and Rex from jail. And on those calls, you hear, "Dear," Asa smiles. Not with cold formality of a woman addressing Mr. Heuermann. She smiles. And I'm not trying to judge her on this, but I can tell you I watched this episode with several people, and there was a lot of commentary. A lot of commentary from people. And your initial reaction when you see this conversation is genuinely unsettling. There he is, the man who she now knows did this. It's not a secret anymore. He's confessed, and he's calling her all the time, and she's picking up that phone and answering, and he's going, "Hey, dear." "Hi." There's a warmth in her voice. It sounds like a woman talking to her husband, not a woman talking to a man who just confessed to strangling and dismembering women in the basement over the last 30 years. And I don't think that smile means what it looks like from the outside. I don't think it's a woman choosing a killer over victims. I think it's what 30 years sounds like when it comes through a phone speaker. That reflects the warmth, the familiarity, the muscle memory of a marriage that shaped every corner of her adult life. It doesn't just switch off because of a confession. It doesn't rewire because she now knows the truth. Asa Elrup spent decades in a relationship where she didn't challenge, didn't question, didn't push. Not because she was hiding something, because she didn't have the framework to see what was underneath or what was going on right underneath her own nose. She trusted the surface of her life. And when you trusted the surface that long, the surface still feels real even after someone tells you what's below it. You don't know to go any deeper. You can't. You won't. That dynamic, the inability to fully switch off 3 decades of conditioned trust, is what makes everything Asa does in this episode so disorienting to watch, because she's toggling between 2 realities that can't coexist. Mr. Huerman in the confession room, dear, on the phone. She's not performing. She's fractured. And she doesn't have the tools to make the pieces fit. Her attorney, Bob Macedonio, framed his visits, 12 total before the plea, as Asa trying to understand herself, not Rex, the serial killer, but how she missed it, how she lived beside it for 30 years and never saw it. He told Fox News Digital that she wants to know that side of Rex, but more importantly, she wants to understand who she is, the woman who didn't see. And I think that's probably the most honest thing anyone around this case has said, because that's the question that would eat you alive. Not how could he do it, but how could I not know? How did I sleep in that house? How did I raise my children there? How did I miss every single sign for 3 decades? And maybe the answer is that there were no signs. Not for her, because Rex Huerman, by his own account, to his daughter Victoria, kept those words completely separate. Victoria Huerman sat across from the same man and asked the question that cuts deepest. She asked her father whether he ever stopped to think that the women he killed were somebody's daughter, somebody's family member, somebody who was loved. And according to Victoria, he said he didn't see them as human. She pushed back further. He told her his demons got to him. He described urges that surfaced when certain opportunities or catalysts presented themselves. He said he kept his family and his victims in completely separate worlds, 2 realities that never touched each other in his mind. He told his daughter that the woman he killed, the women that he killed, weren't people to him. They weren't real, not the way his family was real. Victoria's struggle with this on camera is gutting. She says it plainly. He was a loving dad and a serial killer, and she can't make sense of those 2 things in the same person. She says it's hard to stomach that even that 7 women lost their lives in the house where she grew up. She talks about being just mere feet away from where she would play video games, where she would have fun childhood memories of hanging out in the basement, sometimes with dad. How do you square those things up? Victoria didn't choose any of this. She was born into it. And the timeline of her birth is where the story also reaches a detail that's also very hard to sit with. One of the killings Rex Huerman confessed to happened days before his destination wedding to Asa. Karen Vergata, the 8th victim, the uncharged one. In February of 1996, Asa flew to Europe to prepare for their wedding. Rex stayed behind on Long Island for several days. During that window, Karen Vergata disappeared. She was last seen on February 14th. Her partial remains were found weeks later on Fire Island. More of her remains turned up near Gilgo Beach in 2011. 96 is when she went missing. 2011. It's almost 20 years after. According to prosecutors, Rex Huerman allegedly took Karen Vergata's life during those days. Asa was overseas. Then he flew to Europe to get married to Asa Elrup. And months later, their daughter Victoria was born. This final episode captures Asa confronting Huerman about this specific timeline. She's asking him to walk her through the planning of a murder that fell in the days before their wedding, months before the birth of their child. She already knew the numbers. She already knew the timelines, but she still asked him to lay it out. And I think that's significant, not because it proves some hidden motive, but because it tells you what Asa is actually doing with these visits. She's trying to map the life she thought she had against the life that was actually happening. She's trying to understand how the man who flew to Europe to marry her is the same man who allegedly killed a woman days before the flight. And she can't. Nobody could. But she keeps going back because somewhere in the gap between those two realities is the explanation for her own life. And she hasn't found it yet. Maybe she never will. So what do you do when you can't reconcile your life with what you know it actually was? If you're Asa Alrup, you go home, you stay in the house, and eventually you move into the basement. That's what a lot of people are talking about in this doc. And that really, truly is a part to this where you go, God, I hope she's getting the help she needs. You really do. Because what happens here, where she stays, and again, everybody deals with grief differently. This is one hell of a way to deal with it. After the confession, after the 12 visits, after the wedding murder timeline, after hearing her own daughter say he didn't see the victims as people, after all of it, Asa went back to the Massapequa Park house, had the basement completely gutted, redone, remodeled. Remember seeing what it looked like? Remember the hoarder space it looked like in the first episode or episodes of this? Dark wood paneling. I mean, it looked like, you know, a horror scene out of a 1960s basement. Well, it's all bright and shiny now. Well, it's still very hoarderish. That element hasn't changed all that much. But it's got new white walls, a lot of stuffed animals, a lot of bright blankets, new moldings, new doors, but the same room where by her own husband's admission, strangled and dismembered women. She passes a massive black Meglite flashlight mounted to the wall at the top of the stairs every night, descends into the space, and lies down in the room, in Rex's childhood bedroom, the room he has confessed to doing his crimes in. She's made it her bedroom. I know. Sit with that for a second. That's not conjecture. That's not me spinning something or saying something in a more exciting or verbose way than reality is. No, it's in there. It's her bedroom. And it honestly, I don't know anyway. It looks like the bedroom of a special needs teenager. And maybe that's really what we're dealing with here mentally, in my opinion. There's stuffed animals. There's posters of animals. There's cuddly. I mean, it's disturbing. I don't know any way to say it. It's disturbing because the sheer difference as to what that room was, what that room represents as to what she's made it. And maybe some will say, well, she's trying to add positivity. She's shining light into a space. And maybe that's how she's dealing with it. I guess I'm trying to make sense of it myself. Doesn't matter how I make sense of it. She's the one that's dealing with this. But looking in on it, oh my God. Again, maybe this is something where it would have been healthier to have a loving critic, as Robin always says, that would have said, maybe cameras shouldn't come down here. Maybe you shouldn't show this to the world. Maybe if this is how you're coping and how you're dealing with it, maybe this isn't made for television. Maybe this is just made for you and your God and your peace or whatever you're looking for here. Maybe this isn't for everybody to look at and judge. And because I'm trying to see it. I'm trying to understand it. And I don't know where my mind is on it right now, other than it feels very bizarre and very disturbing. And some of the words that she leaves in the doc leave you going, what the F? She told the filmmakers it's spiritual and that she's trying to say in her own way that she is truly sorry for what the victims went through. I guess in her own way. I'm curious, if you haven't already, weigh in on the comment section. I'd love to see what your reaction has been. There's no right or wrong here. She says she's haunted by dreams every night that will never go away, that it will follow her for the rest of her life, that there will never be justice for anyone. That I found interesting, too. There will never be justice for anyone. Your husband confessed. Now, there's, I don't know what justice truly looks like when your loved one is gone forever. Maybe that's just the answer. Maybe she's just being very blunt about it, of the damage is done. He's done what he's done to me, to you, to everybody. Where do you get justice in that? He's away. I don't know that justice is sitting there answering his phone calls, though, Asa. I don't know that you're giving justice to anyone by continuing to entertain this man and his thoughts and his emotions and giving him an outlet to still be normal, quote unquote. I don't think that's justice. But I don't know that Asa is capable of functioning really in any other way or thinking empathetically about other people. That's my opinion. And I'm not saying that as a damning notion, as that could come across damning towards some people who are consciously doing that. And I think there's a level of such cognitive dissonance and delusion and distortion that's going on with Asa, in my opinion, that it's impossible, I think, for her to process it necessarily in other ways. This might just be how she does it, because that's, things fire differently for Asa, in my opinion. I think there are people who will hear this and say it's an act. I think there are people who will say she had to know. And I think both of these reactions miss what's actually happening here. Asa Elrup is a woman who found out her entire adult life was built on top of a crime. A crime scene, literally. And instead of running, she moved deeper into it. Not because she's performing for the cameras, but because she doesn't know where else to go. Leaving that house means admitting the whole life was a lie. And that's not something you absorb in a month or a year or maybe ever. So she stays, she renovates, she replaces the surfaces, and she lies down in the room where it happened, because sitting inside the truth physically is the only form of processing she has access to. Some people go to therapy. Some people leave. Asa Elrup moved into the kill room. And that house was never an ordinary home, even before she knew what Rex was doing. This is the same house where the book called Death Scenes, a homicide detective's scrapbook, a published collection of crime scene photographs, was reportedly found sitting on a kitchen table during a search in 2024. According to Fox News Digital, investigators had cataloged it during the original search and returned it to the family. Macedonio said he had no knowledge of it. This is the same basement where a safe door had been built into a concrete cinder block as part of the walls, with guns stored on neat racks behind it. These details existed in Asa's daily life for years. She walked past them, she lived with them, and none of it registered as wrong, because when you've never been given a reason to question the foundation, you don't look at the floor, you just walk on. The distance Asa has traveled since that first episode of this docuseries is staggering. In episodes 1-3, filmed in 2025, she was defending Rex's innocence. She said on camera she didn't believe he did it. She said she wasn't even asking herself how she might have missed the signs, because she was certain she would have known. And I believe some of that was filmed in 23 and 24, actually, too. Victoria, in those same episodes, eventually conceded most likely Asa would not move. And here we are now, calling him Mr. Huerman in the confession room. She says she sees evil in him. She sleeps in the room where he says he dismembered the victim. She says she's sorry. But in the phone call, she still hears him call her dear. And she smiles. Maybe that's the most honest thing in this entire docuseries. Not the formal confession, not the spiritual language, not the renovated basement, the smile. Because a smile tells you what Asa can't say out loud, that you don't stop feeling the shape of 30 years just because you found out what was living inside of it. The marriage is over. The man is confessed as a serial killer. The house is a crime scene, and some part of her still responds to his voice in a way that she always did. That's not loyalty. That's not complicity. That's what happens when your entire identity was built inside the life you didn't know was a lie. Macedonio, the attorney, said publicly that Asa wants the focus to remain on the victims and their families. And I believe she means that. But I also think Asa is still trying to figure out where she fits into this story. Whether she's a victim of Rex Hiraman's deception, a bystander who missed every sign, or something she doesn't have a word for yet. She moved into that basement because the answer isn't the jail, and it isn't therapy, and it isn't in the 12 visits. At least in her mind, it's not. Maybe she thinks it's in the room. Maybe sleeping where it happened is the only way she can make it real enough to grieve. The civil lawsuit filed by attorney John Ray against Asa and Victoria, that remains active. Macedonia, the attorney, has been empathetic that Rex Hiraman alone is responsible for these crimes, and any suggestion of family involvement is irresponsible. And I think it probably is irresponsible. I don't think Asa Elrup knew. Was it impossible for her to figure it out? Maybe not for everyone, but for her, maybe. I think she was married to a man who was meticulous about keeping her from knowing. And she was the kind of person who didn't look for what she wasn't shown. But every woman listening to this knows what it feels like on some level, trusting the version of life that's presented to you because you don't know there's another version underneath. Not because you're foolish, because you loved someone. And the person you love was careful enough, disciplined enough, and cold enough to make sure you never had a reason to doubt. Rex Hiraman told his daughter he kept his victims in a completely separate world from his family. He never let the two cross. He compartmentalized their lives away from the lives he was taking, and Asa lived on one side of that wall for 30 years without knowing the wall existed. Now she knows, and she's sleeping on the other side of it. The women Rex Hiraman took the lives of: Melissa Bartholomew, Megan Waterman, Amberlynn Costello, Maureen Brainerd Barnes, Jessica Taylor, Sandra Costello, Valerie Mack, and Karen Vergata. They're not in that basement. They're on the ground across Long Island. They don't hear Asa's apology. They don't see the renovation. But I think Asa Elrup is doing the only thing she knows how to do with a truth too big to carry. She's lying down inside of it every night and trying to feel something that 30 years of not knowing made impossible to feel before. Whether that's enough is something the families of those 8 women get to decide. Not Asa, not the cameras, the families. They're the ones who've been living on the other side of Rex Hirman's wall the entire time. And nobody ever asked them if they wanted company. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in. And like I said, this week, Siobhan Scott joining us Wednesday, our live 11 a.m. Central on our channel, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi on YouTube. Join us. If you're catching this beforehand, anyway, that would be the 29th of April of 26. If you're catching us after, well, guess what? It's already available for you to watch on our channel. So just look a handful of videos ahead and you will find it right there with Siobhan Scott, Robin Drake, and myself. It will be a very fascinating conversation as we break down this new chapter in this docuseries. I got to say, probably the most fascinating docuseries that I've seen in a long time, quite honestly. Big ups to Fitty. He put together, and his G Unit production team put together a very compelling piece. Worth watching and very, very fascinating if you want to dive into the mind of what's going on here. Anyway, I'm interested to get your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Moto Casino.
America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.